Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 217 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, Europe's biggest sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. Isn't it fantastic to record after an Everton win? Obviously, we got that win a few weeks back against Burnley. Suffered a massive 6-0 defeat against Chelsea, but the form hasn't been great. And going into Forest today, it was very much a case of dare not lose, I would say, after yesterday's defeat for Luton at the hands of Brentford. And a win was certainly something which we all strive for. And given how we played in recent months, really, there wasn't much confidence that Everton can go into that game and come away with 3 points. But we certainly have. And it's a massive 3 points to put us further away from both Luton and Nottingham Forest, obviously. Another little four-goal swing in terms of the goal difference between us and Forest as well, which is an added bonus as well. But it's just me today in terms of from the three Unholy Trinity podcast members. So very much like Jason Derulo, I'm riding solo. I think I've used that line before, but one of my favourites. But joining me is sport witness journalist Nevertolian, of course, Sean Lunt. Sean, as I said, fantastic to discuss an Everton win and a massively important one at that.
Yeah, it's nice to feel a bit relieved to want in it rather than than what came after Monday. I mean, not that it was very, very stressless, I should say, stressful, that game. I come out of it with a bang and headache, just focusing on what was going on. But worth it in the end, I suppose.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you know, yeah, I can't say I sat at Goodison Park today, particularly comfortable. I think when it got to 2-0, I was all right. I think at that point, I could see the Forest players, the demeanour changed and the fight sort of drained out of them. But, you know, you can't enjoy Everton being one up. You can never enjoy that because of obviously the situation that we're in and how important the game was and how pivotal the 3 points were to both sides. So it was certainly a nervy affair. But we've got to say, we had a little chat just then before we clicked on record. And, you know, it was definitely, when you look at the Chelsea game especially, we call for a reaction, don't we, after that kind of game when so many players and the manager were so far off it against Chelsea, got so many things wrong. It was lackadaisical. There was no effort and no fight. And we were all concerned after that, given the fact we had a relegation rival to come to Goodison Park a few days later. The reaction today was good, wasn't it? Albeit it wasn't inspiring in terms of, you know, the brand of football, but we know that. We know what comes with Sean Dyche's Everton sides and with these players. But there was a reaction there, wasn't there? And that does give you that little bit of hope after what we lost against Chelsea last weekend, that this side can fight and look to maintain our Premier League status.
Exactly. And That's my thing with this current squad. I don't think that they lack for effort or desire. It's just quality that I think they lack. Previous squads, there's been several players in them squads where I've really not liked them. I've wanted them gone, get rid. They've had really bad attitudes. I don't think there's any truly bad attitudes in this team. So even when they get beat by Chelsea on Monday, it's more of a case of that was just a really bad day at the office and we've got done and we've got done really badly rather than a lack of effort or intent. I mean, for me personally, I think the only person in the squad who I actually question it with now is Onana, who I think has had his head turned by he's going to get a big move in the summer. They're all interested in him. But the rest of them, the intent is there. And you saw that today. And I think his team was picked on that. He picked the players that he knows he can rely on because his comments post-Chelsea were very much on, I've seen something here that I don't like certain people. That's what I got out of it. And I think that went with his team today. They were the ones he trusts more than anyone. And it was rewarded in the end.
You're right. And you know, there was a fair few changes made, wasn't there? You know, obviously, enforced change at right back given Seamus Coleman's injury. But we brought in Jack Harrison. He brought in Andre Gomez from the start at Jesse Garnagay. Dominic Calvert-Lewin was back fit again, which was great for us. So we had no issue with taking players out that he thought certainly had an off night against Chelsea. You know, the likes of James Garner, Amadou Onana, probably the two standouts in terms of those that I think we saw a massive drop off in terms of their quality and ability. And he goes with, you know, it was Decore dropped back into the middle with Garner Gay, and Andre Gomez was a little bit more advanced by Dominic Calvert-Lewin. But the start of the game, I thought, you know, looking back on that, Forrest certainly started that little bit brighter, and you thought, oh, there we go, you know, we seem a little bit off it again, and the warning signs were sort of there, but they didn't really capitalise, Forrest, did they? And it was strange because I had numerous conversations before the game. We had the Forrest fan on our last show. I've spoken to other Forrest fans as well in the build up to the game, and I was very much concerned with what they had in terms of attacking players. You know, Hudson-Odoi, Reina, obviously Elanga was fit and came off the bench. Chris Woods in good goal scoring form. Gibbs White, who I think is their best player, and when he ticks, they tick. And I was concerned for us, given the fact we'd ship six and we struggled with pace, especially on the flanks. Ashley Young was playing on one side, of course. Mikhailenko's not blessed with pace either. But Forrest didn't seem to sort of hammer home the advantages that they had in the first 10 minutes, did they? And that's probably, for me, testament to Everton and us getting our heads into the game. And we looked a little bit more structured, I'd say, than what we've seen in previous weeks.
Yeah, I would say one of the real good things Everton did was close Morgan Gibbs-White off completely. He had that one chance, didn't he, where he sort of lifted it towards the post when he should have probably chipped Pickford. That was about it. He didn't really do anything else. And that's a credit to Everton in particular, obviously the way they've set up for the game. Because I was the same. I thought them two fullback positions are going to be a nightmare. And then he brought Elanga on. And that was my moment of, oh, there we go. This is going to be a slog now. And he didn't do anything. He didn't have any impact whatsoever. Reina didn't really get on the ball and do what he wants to do with it. Chris Wood was closed down. He was supposed to be the big target man, and two centre backs had him covered all day. I was more scared of Everton doing something to themselves than Nottingham Forest doing something to Everton. Because you just learn. You're an Everton fan. You learn if it's going to come from somewhere, it's going to be, and it's going to be Everton that do it to themselves. They know how to shoot them in the foot, themselves in the foot better than anyone. And that's past experience. And that's where my worry in the game was coming from. Nottingham Forest did was particularly effective, and that is a credit to Everton. They obviously had a plan and it worked. And I mean, they had that Chris Wood chance and the goalkeeper turns up, and then after that I couldn't really say any other big opportunities that they created. They were lacking, given what that you'd say, as we said, that the attacking threat is the thing that they've got going for them. I've seen like lots of Everton fans saying they've got goals in them, we haven't, and that's a problem. But they didn't. I don't think other than that Pickford save from Chris Wood, which was a great save, getting across his goal and covering it. I don't remember him really having anything else to do.
No, in terms of saves, no, definitely not. That, I mean, that was a fantastic save, by the way. You know, we had obviously gone 1-0 ahead, so vital. We stayed ahead. We know Everton like to take the lead, and they like to, or they understand how to manage games when they go ahead. So if that would have gone in, it does change the complexion of the game, but that was a terrific save. But you mentioned there, Gibbs White had one in the second half, and you know, you put your house on him there going through, and he sort of cuts across it. lifted it slightly, but then it's drifted wide. But all in all, they were pretty ineffective, and it was a big surprise. But again, testament to us, you know, like you say, we've always seemed to have some kind of mistake in us, Everton. You know, we do it to ourselves. We saw it against Chelsea multiple times. And there was one moment in the first half where Pickford slipped when he kicked it, when he kicked the ball away with his right foot, and it went along the floor pretty much. And you thought, here we go again. You know, a couple of times we were losing the ball in decent positions, and we didn't get a grip of the game. But it was, you know, the actual Forest reaction to that wasn't what I thought it was it would be. But there was a few incidents, wasn't there? You know, during the game, we've seen a fabulous Nottingham Forest statement immediately after the game, which, by the way, you know, you just can't do that. You know, everyone would have seen it by now. You can't have your official Twitter account come out and make the statement that they've made in regards to what they saw as three stonewall penalties. I would disagree with two of them, I've got to say. I think the handball can't be given. I think it's far too close to even give that. And the first foul from Ashley Young in the first half, I think the Forest player goes looking for it and throws himself on the floor. So for me, not a pen. The third one on Hudson-Odoi, maybe so. Yeah, you can feel a bit aggrieved there. But to come out with that kind of statement after the game, saying that they warned the PGMOL that the VAR official was a Luton fan and he wasn't changed. When you start to say that you question the integrity from an official standpoint, not just fans saying it, and you know, we've all got our grievances, you know, of course we have, after the points deductions and decisions that we haven't had. Wolves are a prime example, some of the ones they've had against them this season, you know. Yeah. But you've got to conduct yourself, haven't you, in a certain way. And were you surprised to see that kind of comment made so quickly after the game and on the official club channel almost?
I mean, it's wild, isn't it? It's wildly inappropriate, just from a case of you can't be saying that even if you want to say it. It's probably, I imagine there's football clubs up and down the country at every level who have that conversation, and their owners and their managers and their staff all have that conversation, such and such as an Everton fan, or you know, such and such as a Liverpool fan, whatever. But you can't go on your official channel on Twitter to millions of followers and say it, and say, oh, by the way, we've also had a word with the PGMOL before the game. That's like corruption to me. That's, you can't have football clubs dictating to referees what they can and can't do. But it's a culmination of a developing thing now. So it started with fan channels, but fan channels can criticise referees, they've got no power on it. But then, because big media like Sky and BT, or TNT now, and all them, they're so desperate to be like fan media because they're doing so well, it's corroded the analysis into a case of where you have got them big pundits, big channels criticising the referees on a constant basis and questioning them. And now the football clubs have been emboldened to do the same. So when you've got Liverpool who put out a statement, Arsenal put out a statement, it's every week, isn't it? Oh, they're all questioning them. So what you're saying is we don't trust the referees anymore. So then you've got Nottingham Forest appointing an ex-referee in Clattenburg for this strange role that nobody knows what he's doing. He advises the club on incidents and how to deal with referees. It's bizarre, and this is the latest step of this. But we're slowly sliding into the Turkish situation, you know, Greece, where you've got referees being assaulted on the pitch and leagues are getting cancelled, or you've got Fenerbahce walking off in a final after playing the kids because they don't trust the referees. It's not healthy. It's not good. It's a dangerous position to be in because you're questioning the integrity of the league and those that run it. So where do you go? I mean, we've questioned the integrity of the league and those running it this year because of PSR. But when you do it with the referees as well, like what's left? It's a very dangerous precedent to try and set. And I think they're really in risk of getting hit hard. I mean, I've seen it already said that it won't be points deductions. It'll be a big fine. But what does that achieve if you're doing that? Because they can do this every week now. We'll just pay the fine every week. It doesn't matter. It's really concerning.
I mean, obviously, the issue goes deep, doesn't it? Because we will all probably agree that the standard of officiating has certainly decreased in recent years, and every side's on the end of poor decisions. And you know, going back since the sport was invented, I'm sure that's been the case. Obviously, it's magnified nowadays, given the fact that VAR is so heavily involved. And I think when you look at how VAR is used in other competitions around Europe, we're miles off it in terms of how we use it. And I think I've said this time and again, officials almost hide behind it. They wait for them to officiate the game and give key decisions, and that's also dangerous. And that's where the thing, the frustration comes in. When you've got, you know, the technology is there and it doesn't get used correctly, I think that sets a dangerous precedent as well. So I get every single club and manager's frustration. As fans, we feel it all the time. And Anthony Taylor, I thought, was really, really poor today for both sides. I thought he just lost control of the game. And, you know, Forest fans will argue he should have had three penalties. I couldn't see why he was booking our players at times for certain things and not giving certain fouls as well, and then playing advantage, but then not pulling it back when we lost the ball. But when he played advantage for them, he pulled it back and gave them the free kick. And a lot of things, a lot of inconsistencies that we see all the time. So I'm not surprised it's got to this point. As you say, I think it's very dangerous. Of course it is. But the PGMOL, the Premier League, the FA, they've done very little to address the concerns that have been shown. You know, appointing Howard Webb is all well and good. I'm you know, letting him come out once a month on Sky with Michael Owens to go through, you know, the microphones from certain decisions. Fantastic. You know, okay, it's a step in the right direction, the fact that you're releasing audio and things like that. But I think until you sort of get a little bit of transparency during the game where we can hear conversations in terms of major decisions and things like that, I think fans, players, managers will go down that rabbit hole of corruption and things like that. You know, we've done it ourselves, as you said, over the PSR stuff. And at times you can get carried away, of course, and you understand it. But clubs need to hold themselves better, don't they? The clubs can't come out and do that. There's channels, there's ways and means of doing it. They're certainly not the first side to suffer poor decisions. We've had it ourselves in recent weeks when it comes to penalties and not getting them. But you can't come out on an official channel and do that, however frustrated you are. And, you know, like you say, where do you then draw the line? Where does the punishment stand then? Because it does set a dangerous precedent going forward. And there's nothing stopping every single club every single week, like you say, doing exactly the same thing. And I think we're in real dangerous territory at the moment, given, you know, you've got that. You've got the stuff happening with the FA Cup reform, you know, and where replays are being scrapped. And, you know, just talk of a club's going to go on strike from the competition. And there's a lot of unrest around football at this moment in time. And this season, said this time and again, this season will be remembered for off-the-field stuff in regards to football politics, PSR, things like that, and not what should really matter. And that's the on-field stuff.
See, the thing with that statement is, to me, it's petulant. It's, we didn't get what we wanted, so now we're going to encourage a pile-on on the referee and the system because we didn't get what we wanted. But nobody gets what they want from referee, and that's the point. The referee is supposed to be unbiased. So there's always going to be decisions against you, even with technology. There always is. It's always going to go against you because that's the nature of refereeing. It's subjective. We want a perfect system on something that always has to be subjective. So even though there's defined rules for fouls, whatever, each referee would always deem that differently. And that's what was funny about the referee's performance today is that he was inconsistent, but he was consistently inconsistent.
Yeah, correct.
There was no consistency to it. He wasn't not given the same things every time. It's wild. And there's referees doing that every week. And I think we can agree that the standard of refereeing is not great in the country. It's not. And they've certainly not made an effort to drastically improve it. And they've been found out by the technology, because you see people complain about VAR constantly, but the system itself is fine. It's the people operating it that's the problem. If you asked me to operate it, I'd be a shambles, wouldn't I? Because I'm not trained. And I think they were so quick to try and put it in, they never thought, oh, hang on, what implications is this going to have? If they'd have delayed it, say, a year or 2 years and trained and properly set it up, we probably wouldn't have this situation now. Because it was this shiny new gimmicky thing that was, I think it was at the World Cup was the first one, wasn't it, where it was used. And then it come into the Premier League. Oh, we've got to get it in, we've got to get it in, because we can't be behind, because we're the Premier League, we've got to have the show. And it's caused this big backlog now, and this is where it's all sliding towards.
Yeah.
But it's the same as you say with, like, you watch Champions League and they've got the automated system for offsides, which they're bringing in next year. And it's so efficient the way that they do it. It shows us up. But I don't blame referees for hiding behind it at the same time, because it's a get-out clause, isn't it? Or if I make a big mistake, VAR will save me. Except VAR doesn't seem to be saving them half the time.
Yeah. And the stakes are so high, aren't they? You know, in the Premier League especially, you know, the stakes are so high in terms of making wrong decisions. So obviously, when we're saying it was hard and behind VAR, they were almost out of fear at times. Yeah. And that's why they don't officiate the game correctly. But then that then sneaks into easier calls to making things that VAR don't get involved with. And that's a slippery slope. And that then has made the standards drop. So the on-field officiating now, because they have the fallback of VAR, it gets refereed from 100, 200 miles away in somewhere in and around London, which is just, it's a crazy situation. But as I say, Forest have been on the end of it today. We can argue all day about whether we think they were pens and they were not pens. But they weren't given. I mean, Ashley Young's reaction to was interviewed after the game, and they asked us for his reaction. He said, well, they weren't given. So they weren't penalties. It's as simple as that. You say, yeah, but look at your face. Well, yeah, but they weren't given that. That's the end of it. You know, they come and go. We've had it ourselves. As I say, Wolves have probably been the worst side this season, and they suffered some horrendous decisions over
and
the
they
course.
Be justified.
Exactly.
In their anger, they are justified in it. I don't think Nottingham Forest are particularly. Not after today. That's what really irks me about that statement, is it's a strange time to put it out, because they're not clear-cut disasters for refereeing. Mm. You'll get assessed after the game by his assessors, and they'll go, maybe, maybe not. But it's not a 2 out of 10 performance. You've had a howler, you know what I mean?
Mm.
Just not that the statement would ever be justified, but if you put out a statement saying, we're upset, blah, 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 you go, okay, fair enough. But questioning the legitimacy of it, so to speak, it's just wrong. There's no way you can get away with it. I saw Jamie Carragher likened it to a man down the pub, or a woman, I suppose. It could be anyone. You know, it's the same. It's like an angry fan after the game complaining to his mates about it. But for an official club to do it's just wrong on so many levels. It's unbelievable.
The best word, like you said, is petulant. And that's exactly what it is. And it's been reactionary. It's emotional. It's a big game for them as well as us. They've lost 3 points to a rival down the bottom of the table. They feel wronged over the whole PSR thing as well. Rightly or wrongly, they feel wronged by it. So there's numerous factors, I think, playing into why they said what they said. But, you know, they've got to take time to reflect and then come out maybe with a statement on Monday or a few hours later. Now, you know, it's getting investigated, I think, by the Football Association and the Premier League, because you simply just can't do that. And it does smack of, it didn't go our way. So we're going to throw our toes out of the pram. I'm going to kick off about it straight away. Not a good look, as far as I'm concerned, really not a good look. But as far as we're concerned, we don't care. It's as simple as that. And as I say, we've been there. We've won the game. And for us, we don't care one jot. And it was, you know, we go through the highlights of the game. You know, the one of the first half was certainly the goal from, is this a guy again, unlikely source. He got into a similar position earlier on, and all the fans around me were saying, don't shoot. And he didn't. He went back on himself. He got in the start position again. Sort of side footer shot to a ruck of players. The goalkeeper was unsighted, in off the post. And, you know, I think it's his second goal of the season. He doesn't score many, does he? But fantastic just to get a goal, full stop, a goal in open play. It was also nice. But for a player who looks like this is going to be his swan song as well, by all accounts of the club, doesn't look like he's going to get offered an extension to his contract. It was nice to see him get back on the side after a niggling injury, come back in, score a good goal and set us on the way and calm a few nerves as well in that first half.
I actually thought he was the man of the match.
Oh, I totally agree.
Completely. I mean, he's not. Sometimes he gets over. He's like a foot. He's one of them footballers who gets overexcited, so he starts making mistakes because he tries to be quick, and it's not what you're good at. But he was everywhere Everett needs him to be today. He was calm. He kept getting those little tackles in, them little touches that just broke things up. He was great. He was all over the place, and then he got that goal. I mean, like you said, I think everybody watching that must have closed their eyes or turned, because they know where that one's going straight away. I think I've seen every other one that hasn't gone in, and I didn't look at that one today, and it's gone in. So that'll have to be the standard next time. Every time he gets the ball near the box, I think I'll look away and it might end up in the back of the net, hopefully. But I mean, I love him, so I'm glad that's capped that off, so to speak.
Yeah, but and I think though as well, how many times do we get into those positions though when our players don't shoot? You know, we've seen it twice today where they've had a go and it's gone in, and we do it time and again where we think just especially the likes of like Dwight McNeil, who's got a great shot, James Garner, players like that, who you're thinking, you know, Harrison, you can strike a ball. And we get in the ground sort of 20 yards out, 25 yards out, and we're scared to do it. you know, if you don't buy a ticket, you don't win the raffle, as Andy Gray used to say. So it's one of those things where you've got to give it a go. And like you say, 99 times out of 100, Garnegay puts it over the bar or scuffs it wide or what have you. But this is the one time where it does go in, and it was a decent strike. You say it was a bit more composed, you know, lacked a bit of power compared to Dwight McNeil's. But, you know, a decent finish, which set us on the way. And as I say, calmed a few little nerves, because after, obviously, Luton's defeat yesterday, it was really important, like I said at the start of the show, not to lose the game. That was the first thing. But to get a little bit of a head start and a buffer by going 1-0 ahead, you know, it puts you into a decent position, because they have to then chase the game. And, you know, we've mentioned there, you know, the stuff from Jordan Pickford, it kept us ahead in the game. But going into the second half, then obviously 1-0 up, we see Forest again. You know, from their side, if I'm their fans, they had a little bit of control in terms of possession, you'd say, because we sort of at times couldn't get out, and we didn't put our foot on the ball, and we were allowing them sort of territory, if you like. But they were getting into some decent positions out wide, but not really doing a great deal with it. And it was no surprise to me, really, that, you know, we did go further ahead. As much as we weren't sort of in an attacking sense, laying the glove on them, we weren't creating, where we didn't create in the first half. You know, there was a header for Calvert-Lewin, which was a comfortable save for the goalkeeper. And Mikhailenko skied one about 30 yards over as well, and about 30 yards wide, and then obviously the goal. But second half, there was even less, really. You know, one attempt for Calvert-Lewin, which he put wide, but I think the referee almost said, well, that was a foul anyway, so it wouldn't have stood. But Forrest just didn't really sort of hammer home any kind of advantage possession-wise, did they? And it was good to see us then sort of take it to them and get that second goal. And I think when Dwight McNeil puts that in the back of net, another fabulous strike. We know he's got it in him. He scored a great goal at the City Ground this season in the reverse fixture. We've seen him score some fantastic goals for the club since he's been there. He unleashes that from 25 yards, same as Garnegay, in off the post, 2-0 up. At that point, I actually allowed myself to relax, which is unusual, as I think we need about 3 or 4 goals before I tend to calm myself down a bit. But at 2-0, I just didn't see a way back for Forrest, and I was watching their players from my seat in the paddock, and they just looked dejected. At that point, the demeanour changed, heads were bowed, and I thought they're beaten here. Do you know how big the game's been built up, hasn't it? Because of how important it is to both sides, and they were beaten. And for me personally, I started to relax into it and thought, you know what, this is the game for us here, and it's a big 3 points.
I thought Everton's experience showed as well. They've been doing this for a few years now. There's a few players in that squad who've been here before, haven't they? Like they're used to it. And a lot of the Nottingham Forest players didn't look like they knew how to live up to the occasion. So once their system didn't work or whatever, I actually don't know what their system was today. It was a bit bizarre. Nuno Espirito Santo's teams tend to be counter-attacking. But Everton didn't allow them to be a counter-attacking team and didn't give them that space in behind. Hudson-Odoi got in it once or twice. There's the third penalty incident, probably one of them, where he gets in. Morgan Gibbs-White got in behind, but that was the one where the ball had actually been about a foot out. I don't know how that one was allowed to go anyway. Everton didn't allow them to play how they wanted to play. And once that failed in the first 20-25 minutes, it was there for Everton. But they haven't got the quality to go and then take the game by the scruff of the neck, because Everton, I think under Dyche, want to be in a counter-attacking team as well. So it was this bizarre situation where you had these two systems that were clashing and just neutralising it completely. But then Everton, when they took their chances, they made their own luck. And I mean, I think that's one of the big problems with Everton's attacking. They're so concerned that they're not scoring goals. They're trying to score perfect Manchester City goals, get to the byline, pull it in, score from 2 yards, you know. And Gaze had his chance then. And once that went in, you could see that a lot of them thought, okay, this is our game now. We can go and get this. And then once he didn't get the second, I think they panicked a little bit in the second half then, at the beginning, where they were thinking, oh, hang on, we're only 1-0 up. We know what happens here. Like the fans in the stadium, I think that spreads around the team as well, where they think, oh, we haven't taken advantage here. What do we do next? And you can see they lost their legs. And I think that was part of it, was with Gomez as well. I thought he was excellent in the first half, getting on the ball and turning and putting it forward and getting Everton on the attack. And then he tied in the second half. And then once that went, Everton struggled to do what they wanted to do then. But Nottingham Forest didn't take advantage of it in any shape or form. And as I said earlier, I think it was he completely closed off Gibbs White, who I think is brilliant. I am actually disappointed Everton never got him when they were in for him. It was a lot of money, but I think he would have been perfect for that Doucouré role in the midfield. Once he was eliminated, yeah, Chris Wood, who I think had 4 in 5 before that. He had one shot in the first half, and that was it. That was it. I think it'd be better to talk about Everton's performance and what they did right than what Nottingham Forest did wrong, because I just think Everton neutralised him in every position, other than maybe right back where Young did struggle, admittedly.
Well, you know, as we said already, he was the one involved in the three non-penalties or the penalty incidents, wasn't he? So, unsurprising, and he got his usual booking as well, which is, you know, is a standard procedure for us. Oh, I thought he got booked. He didn't. It was the core who got booked, and I thought he got booked. But he's one of those players, Ashley Young, isn't he, who the manager seems to trust, which is, you know, we understand, especially when Seamus Coleman is not fit, because he's obviously a leader on the pitch. And you see, you know, Ashley Young tends to get the nod. Because for the life of me today, I was convinced that Ben Godfrey comes in at right back, just for the sheer pace from the Forest wingers. And when I saw the team use, and he just thought, why does he persist? But he did struggle at times. Other times, he did okay. But he did struggle, and the penalty incidents, were a prime example of that. But, you know, the way players you mentioned there, just Ghana Gay, saying he stood out, thought he was terrific. Andre Gomez, like, it's his legs, isn't it? He just can't do 90 minutes. And the quality just drops off, doesn't it? And we know he's a lovely footballer. But he didn't start particularly well his first 10 or 15, but then he thought he grew into the game first half. I thought the last half hour of the first half, he played well. But I thought a player who, at times, his quality did lack during the game from a passing perspective. Those through balls at times, just, you know, not getting the right power, picking the wrong ball. But his work rate was terrific before he even scored was Dwight McNeil. You know, not a perfect performance, but if you're not playing well from a quality perspective, make sure you put it in. And his closing down was terrific. I thought again today, numerous times. I know people took the mick a little bit when Everton put that tweet out after the Burnley game with Dwight McNeil chasing balls down and things like that. But he did it today in the right moments. And he did it numerous times. And, you know, it did lead to some turnovers of the ball, or getting the ball back, or winning throw-ins. And that's what we need. When the quality is not there, and when you're up against any side in the Premier League and you're struggling to win games and you've got to battle hard, the least that we expect is players to really put it in. And I thought today that's the best he's been for a good while. Obviously a fantastic goal. Nearly got a second just after as well. By the way, he caught another, you know, decent strike, which was, he made a half-decent save. But Dwight McNeil, I think, is really important to this side. We know he's had a few off the field issues this season, which have been much publicised, which has certainly impacted his standard of his play. He got an injury in pre-season against Stoke, which kept him out for a while, and I don't think he recovered from that pretty very quickly before he was thrown back in. So it's been a difficult season for him, but when he's on form and when he's delivering, you know, his set pieces are good, his crosses are good, and he's contributing with goals, he's vital to this side. We saw today what he's all about. And this is what I say. I want him to open up a little bit more and take a few more chances in terms of have a shot from 20, 25 yards out, because you've got the ability in that left foot to cause problems for their goalkeeper. But nice to see him get back to some kind of form today.
What I would say about Dwight McNeil is the manager trusts him to do what he wants him to do. And like you say, he'll chase back, he'll block. And in the first 10 or 15 minutes of today's game, that right-hand side for Nottingham Forest with Nico Williams was the real problem area for Everton. He got in once and had a shot. And then after that, he clearly realised what he was supposed to be doing with Michalenko. And then that side just was completely closed off. That was why they took Reina off and he brought Alanga on. Made no difference whatsoever. His defensive contribution is greater than his offensive contribution at the minute, unfortunately. But I think he has had a difficult season in that he was flying high at the end of last season, doing really well. He had that Brighton performance, which is probably the best I've seen him. And then he got that injury right when he was hitting his peak and he was doing really well. And obviously he had off-field issues as well. But I like him. I think in a better assembled squad for Everton, he doesn't play as much and you get more out of him. So I think Everton's real struggle at the minute is the two wide players have got no pace whatsoever. So they're very one-dimensional. You don't really go past the man and you know, get do what they whatever need them to do and support, and that leaves Calvert-Lewin isolated. But if you had a squad that had pacey players in those positions as well, and I mean, they tried to sign Alanga in the summer. They wanted Nonto as well, didn't he? So it's obviously something Everton are aware of as well. I think in a season where he's playing less and is rotated in a team, probably you probably get more from him as well. What I would like to say, another player I thought was brilliant today was Branthwaite. Some of the times when he got on the ball and he had that run through midfield, didn't he? It was that was great. And played Everton. He was actually Everton's best passer on the ball all day. Some of the passes he was picking out. And I mean, with Tarkowski has become the one who I'm more concerned about at centre back than Branthwaite, who's got less experience than him. Like, by what, tenfold probably at this point in their careers. But he was so calm up against Wood, who's a difficult big man to deal with. He had no problems with him coming out. And he used a sliding tackle on Morgan Gibbs-White. Gibbs-White just got himself on the edge of the box and looked like he was going to do something. And he just crunched him and got rid of the ball and then was up and ready to go again. I think there was a combination of him, Gay, Garner Gay, McNeil. Them three were all crucial for Everton today. I think they were the solid base there, and then Everton built on that.
Yeah, I think Branthwaite, he struggled, didn't he, against Chelsea. Had a real off night, which we said on the podcast the other day, it's allowed. A kid of his age, it's going to happen. He's not going to be Mr. Consistent, but that's what he has been. You know, we've seen it week in, week out with him. So he's going to have games when he struggles. All players do. Even the best players in the world struggle. And he had a difficult night against Chelsea. But then, you know, he went off injured and we feared the worst. We feared he'd be missing this weekend and for the next couple of games or so. But he was in today, and you know, I think sometimes you almost, you know, don't give him the praise he deserves because we see it so often. And he was no different today. Back to what Jared Branthwaite does, like you say, a few little runs carrying the ball, which was lovely to see. His passing was good. You know, we know what his tackling's like. He was good in the air. You know, Chris Wood won a fair bit, but you know, against Tarkowski and Branthwaite, but Branthwaite and Tarkowski won a fair bit as well. They were, you know, a couple of good battles, I thought, across the their front man and our back line. You know, a player in form, like you say, scored 4 and 5. And someone who I'm always concerned about because he is such a big unit. You know, he's great in the air. He's in great goal scoring form. And what for Jordan Pickford in the first half? He probably scored against today, but I thought Dempsey did well against him. But it was just, you know, it's nice to come away from Goodison Park with a couple of goals. You know, another clean sheet. I think it's Jordan Pickford's 10th of the season, which is fantastic. You know, 10 clean sheets. I think he's second overall in clean sheets, which is, you know, behind David Ray, I think it is. You know, they're looking to try and win the Premier League. So two different ends of the scale and two different ends of the table, and we're getting clean sheets against a side who've got goals in them. We've said it already. You know, I watched them last week against Wolves. It could have gone either way, but he created some chances and he scored a couple of goals as well. But Everton just marshalled them very, very well. And, you know, I think it was 6 shots in total. That's nothing. I mean, I think we had 7 ourselves, but 6 shots is not very many from a side that, you know, with that kind of attack. So we did do well. But before we look ahead to the Merseyside derby, obviously, concerns around Beto today. It wasn't nice to see him go down, knocked unconscious after challenging for a header with Gibbs-White, and he landed him sort of on his head and face planted the floor, and you thought at that point he's definitely out. He didn't move. Obviously awake and alert and talking when he left the pitch and responding to the fans who were singing his name, which is great to see. I don't know the protocols inside out, but I don't think he's allowed to even play. I think it might even be 5 days. Can't train for 5 days from what I can remember. So we're going to be without him for the Merseyside derby. We saw Calvert-Lewin went down, came back on for 5 minutes, then went off. So, you know, all roads may lead to Yusuf Tchimiti come Wednesday night. But good to see that Beto obviously was alert and talking as he left the pitch, and hopefully nothing too serious there going forward.
Yeah, and he gets a lot of criticism, Beto, doesn't he? anyone who follows me on social media knows I love him. I don't know what it is about him. He's got the ability to be maybe like he's like a Duncan Ferguson figure, and that he won't get you
cult hero. He's a cult hero.
Cult hero. That's what I'm looking for. Yeah, he's a cult hero. I think he's got that ability in him. I actually don't think Everton played to his strengths, but you saw when he come on today, he always puts himself in there. He'll fight and he'll try. And Everton fans love that. You know, that's the dogs of war mentality that Everton love. And it was really disappointing to see him go off, because I think he could have actually got himself a goal today as well. There was a moment, wasn't there, where he got the ball and run. He was right, yeah, going at it, and he did a little run and got himself into the box. And I thought, oh yeah, this is going to be my moment. This is going to be my moment. He's got it, and then obviously that happens. So it's a shame that they might lose him, because if Calvert-Lewin is, as you say, if Calvert-Lewin is out as well, I actually think they might not risk Calvert-Lewin for that game. If he's feeling a little niggle in his hamstring, then you've got other games. And he's the fancied one, isn't he, Calvert-Lewin? He does what Dyche wants him to do. It might just be a case of they put Chimiti in anyway, just not to risk it, and have him definitely fit for the game after.
Yeah, you could be right. You know, against Chelsea, I think he potentially could have been part of that squad, but they decided not to, given that we were playing Forest on the Saturday. So maybe that's going to be in their mind, just thinking. But, you know, hopefully, you know, two of the three of them are available. You know, Calvert-Lewin, Chimiti and Beto, as I say. I don't think Beto will be, but if we have Calvert-Lewin and Chimiti, then that's fine, you know. But we are going to look ahead to the Merseyside derby. Liverpool have just beaten Fulham by 3-1. So same points as Arsenal, second in the table, City with a game in hand. So still very much, you know, they're in the title race, of course they are, given that, you know, that surprise defeat to Crystal Palace out of Europe last week as well. So, you know, as much as people are saying, you know, that, oh, the wheels are falling off, they haven't, and they won't. You know, it'll go probably to the end, this, you know, three sides vying for the title. And Liverpool are well in there with a chance, and we know how it goes. You know, away from home, we always struggle against them. We don't do too bad now and again at home. You know, we drew last season, could have won it with that Connor Cody goal, obviously, that was chalked off. But, you know, after today's game, Sean, do you see this as very much a free hit and maybe approach it in sort of a damage limitation way? Because the last thing we want to do is concede, you know, 4 or 5 goals. Or do you think we might see Everton have a little go and try and get something from the game?
I think the word for it would be pragmatic. I think Dyche will look at the squad that he's got. I mean, he's pragmatic anyways. The epitome of pragmatic, isn't he, Sean Dyche, to be honest? He will probably look at that game and the squad that he's got available to him and then decide what they're going to do. But if you said, now, do you want to draw a 0-0, bore draw, 0-0, Goodison Park, would any Evertonian not bite the hand off at that? I mean, I would personally. But I tend to look at things like that. We've got bigger fish to fry at the minute. The Merseyside derby, I mean, how long has the Merseyside derby not bothered mattered to Everton anyway, to be honest with you? But in terms of the other games that we've got coming up, we've got Luton and Sheffield United. Brentford, they might be on the beach now after their win yesterday. I mean, they look comfortable now. You know, we've got more pressing matters than going hell for leather against Liverpool, getting battered 4-0. You lose all your confidence from this weekend. You maybe pick up a couple of injuries and you're in the same situation anyway, where you're desperate to win again next weekend. It's one of them where if you lose, it's not heartbreaking, is it? Let's be honest.
No, I think, and it sounds terrible to say, because, you know, there are our nearest rivals in terms of geography, and there's a lot of bad blood between the clubs from over the years and things like that, of course, and that's what derbies are all about, you know. And I'm sure that it'll be white hot at Goodison Park before the game. And, you know, I think Everton just need to make sure that they stay in the game for as long as they can, because we know the qualities. You know, I haven't got to sit here and list their players in terms of what they can do. We know what they can do, and we know that they score goals for fun most of the time. But Everton, it's a balancing act really in terms of what we've just done with that win. You know, and bear in mind, we won 2 of the last 3. We've got to put a positive spin on things in terms of beating Burnley and then beating Forest, 2 sides who were down there with us. That's massive in the grand scheme of things. You know, given the fact that before the Burnley game, we hadn't won in, what was it, 13 games. You know, that's some, say, turnaround. It is some turnaround to win 2 of the last 3. And win games, dare I say, that we were expected to win, or we would expect as fans to win. That's probably the best way to put it. You know, Liverpool comes to Goodison Park. We don't expect anything from it. We just don't. And, we know that we're going to have to be at our best, and they're going to have a real off day for us to get something from the game. You know, it's not impossible. You know, Palace went there and beat them at Anfield, which, you know, what we would give for that. But they're not unbeatable. You know, Atalanta have shown that. As I say, Palace have shown that. But wouldn't it be fantastic to really knock them off the potential title challenge train and take points off them at Goodison Park. You know, we've been there before where we sang about them losing the title at Goodison Park. Wouldn't it be great just to do it again? And obviously, most importantly, help ourselves on our way to securing our Premier League status.
I mean, I would say on the flip side, what Crystal Palace did last week, Everton could absolutely do that. I don't think we've got the technicians the way that they've got, like, especially as he gets that goal. But they, that win was based on their defensive ability. And I don't think you can question Everton's defensive ability whatsoever. And if Everton make that game attritional and, you know, really dog Liverpool down, Liverpool aren't in the greatest of form. They're not playing well at all. That Crystal Palace result was the culmination of a fair few weeks of really tepid, awful displays from Liverpool. They've not been flying. They just happen to have found themselves at the top of the table this year. It's a bit mad. So, I mean, I am very negative and saying, you know, I just expect to get beat. That's it. I'm not really fussed if it happens. Bigger fish to fry. But Everton have got the ability to do something in that game if they want to. I think they'll have to read the situation. But if it gets to Liverpool go 2-0 up, I think Sean Dyche and his team will go, you know what, let's just take our kicking here, so to speak, and we'll move on because we've got focuses elsewhere that we're more concerned with. But I don't. If you repeat what Crystal Palace did with that defensive display in Everton, more than capable of that, it could make things interesting. And I mean, you nick a 1-0 win there, like you say, imagine the confidence that gives you for the rest of the season. You go further away from that relegation battle. You've just beat Liverpool at home. That's a big win for you. It can happen. Stranger things have happened. I just don't expect to on this situation.
But you know what? I went to Goodison today and I really wasn't expecting to win the game. And it just wasn't. And that's just because they haven't given me any kind of confidence to beat a side of Forest ability. And okay, you can say Forest are down there for a reason. Of course they are. But they have been deducted 4 points. But, you know, put 4 points onto what they've got. And it's still not a huge total in terms of, you know, from the number of games that they played this season. So they're not the greatest of sides. But given the fact that we were so poor against Burnley and we won the game and what we'd seen prior to that, I just had no confidence at all. So Everton can certainly surprise. And I think today will certainly give us that little bit of impetus now. I think, you know what? You know, we can win games with football and we can grind it out. We know these are a good side. You know, derbies are derbies. And I always say it. I think every time we preview the derby since we started this show in 2019, I say it all the time. Set the tone. You know, the first tackle that goes in, set that tone. None of this friendly derby nonsense and all that. You need somebody to put somebody over the hoardings or something like that to say, listen, we're here to fight. You might lose the game, but listen, get them down to our level. And it sounds terrible to say. We're not as good as them, of course. We're miles off it. But to make it competitive, get them down to our level. Rile them up. Put your foot in. Show that you want to fight. And then see what happens. Anything can happen then. If they react and get players sent off, anything can happen. And that's what you've got to try and do. I'd love to see a throwback performance against these. Because, yeah, they've got quality players. But it's 11 men against 11 men. It's as simple as that. We played them last season. You know, it was obviously the start of the season, really, wasn't it, at Goodison? But we know what we can do against them. We had chances against them in that game. I know we had a goal disallowed, but there was chances there to win that game. And a lot of those players are still there. So let's try and call upon memories of last season and let's see what we can try and do. And I just hope that today does give them some confidence and they think, do you know what, lads? Yeah, we've done ourselves a real favour there today with those 3 points. What can we do on Wednesday? Can we get a point? Which, and a point, by the way, would be a fantastic outcome for me. I think a point would be a big, big point. But if you lose, don't lose your heads. Don't you know, it's not one of those games where you need to dwell on too much because it's not the end of the world. Obviously, the manner of defeat is important. Just give a good showing. But don't make a fool of yourselves. But it's not the be-all and end-all. And sometimes that can really help. If you've got that attitude and you can go into it relaxed, then anything can happen. And the players have shown today after, I certainly questioned the stomach for the fight after the Chelsea game because I thought that's the worst I've seen under Sean Dyche by a country mile. And there's been a few episodes since he's come in where I've thought, what the hell, we're miles off it. Wolves this season away was another example. But Chelsea was pitiful. But the players have shown something today. They've shown you got the minerals for the fight. And it doesn't matter who's in town. Listen, Goodison Park, night game. they're going for the title. You know, they would love nothing more. The way that Sky wanted this game in the last week of the season, by the way. Sky were pushing for this game to be rearranged for the last week of the season because they thought, well, Liverpool win the title, Everton go down. But how good would that be for our soap opera? But it's not. So let's put a nail in their coffin and let's impact their title challenge. And for me, you know, I've probably because I've talked myself into this now after today's game and speaking about it today, there's no reason why we can't take points off them. And the players have got to believe that.
I mean, I would say Sean Dyche commented after the Chelsea game, didn't he? And I've said to the players, is this what happens? Is this the moment that you've all packed in? Get a new manager, have a nice little bounce, see what happens. They were quite literally his comments to the press. And I thought that was interesting because he got a lot of criticism for them Messiah comments, but I think he was actually on the ball of, no, actually, we need to get out of this cycle of let's throw in a performance like that, get a new man in, he'll play nice football and then make us all feel good about ourselves. But in 8 months' time, we'll be in the same situation. And I think the response from the players today was, oh, no, he hasn't lost the dressing room. Actually, we do actually believe in him. And then you get your win then today as well on top of that. You can go into a game like Liverpool and go, well, why not? Why not give it a go, I suppose? Can't it, can it? But as you said, don't open yourself up to a hiding, because then you're eradicating all the good work you've done in the last game then.
Yeah, exactly that. And as long as Sean Dyche wears his tracksuit again, we should be okay, shouldn't we? Change of attire. He said it was a small thing that they looked at, and he went with the change. So listen, whatever works, you know, go for it. But
I just assumed he was a snail on the shop, to be honest. So they're trying to get rid of the gear before the end of the season.
Yeah, well, to be fair, there's a good sale on him on Everton at the moment, and all the stuff going cheap. So maybe he's a real time advertiser for Fanatics and Everton. But it's it was strange seeing him in a taxi today. That's the first time, I think, ever at Everton, I'd probably like to say. He's worn a taxi on the sideline. But I'm sure come Wednesday, it'll be exactly the same now, because he'll think that it works. So we'll probably see him donned in his taxi once again.
Get a bit weird if he turns up in either Pep Guardiola or Arteta style, you know, that Vincent Kompany trainers, suit jacket and a white T-shirt. Then we'll have to start having questions, I think.
I know. He's far from a style icon, isn't he? But listen, if it works, it works, and we'll go with it. But sure, let's finish off with our predictions if we can. Obviously, it's a big ask. We know that we know what's the league table set at this moment in time. But what are you saying for Wednesday's Merseyside derby?
I think it'll be a very boring 0-0.
It'll
be one of those that gets hyped up because it's Merseyside derbies all the time, and they either go where it's a really boring game and it's 0-0, or Everton get battered. Aside from the Rashards and one at Anfield, which no one saw coming, but there was no fans there, so we don't count that apparently.
Exactly.
I think it'll be a boring one because I think Sean Dyche will see what Liverpool have been doing lately. They're not great, and if you make them games really attritional and really dogged for them, they don't like it. They really don't like it. They like doing what they want to do, and that's been the case under Jürgen Klopp all the time anyway. His whole thing is, if you don't let them do what they want to do, they don't like it, they hate it. And I think Sean Dyche will do the same for this game. He'll make it dead dog, dead attritional. Like when he said against Burnley, you know, I made it horrible. I wanted a horrible game and I got it. I think he'll do the same, because that preserves Everton as well. Then they don't burn themselves out. They get beat, they move on. Rather than, you know, you go hell for leather, you get beat, what have you gained?
Yeah, I think you're right. And that's got to be the approach, hasn't it? You know, it's got to be that way and get under the skin. As I said it already, it's so important to try and do that, and no reason why we can't. But I'll go with an overly optimistic 1-1 draw. I think we can get something from the game. I can't see us winning the game, and that won't come as much surprise to anyone listening, I'm sure. They're a good side. It's as simple as that, and they're fighting for the league title, but we can put a stop to it. Which, you know, with Arsenal playing obviously Tuesday against Chelsea, I think it's important that they put a marker down, you know, before we play Liverpool and then City play Thursday. So I think it's one of those where Arsenal could be key to the whole thing as well, if they can keep on winning, you know, which that anomaly against Aston Villa came as a surprise, I think, to everybody. But back on form against Wolves this weekend in a good 2-0 win. If they can put a marker down and get, you know, make sure they pull away by 3 points, then hopefully that gets in their heads as well. But I'm gonna say 1-1, you know, a little bit of confidence from today, and why not, indeed, you know. But at least we can enjoy a couple of days in work now before the Merseyside derby, after Everton got that that pressure relieving win today. But Sean, that is us for today, and I appreciate you taking a bit of time on a Sunday evening to speak to me.
No problem. I enjoy being on. So, and it's obviously, as you say, it's nice to be talking about an Everton win for once and something positive rather than everything else that we've got to deal with this year. So,
man, these wins are like gold, aren't they? You know, this season and especially lately as well. So we'll certainly enjoy it over the next couple of days. That's for sure. And that's us for today. We'll be back ourselves next weekend. Obviously, Brentford Saturday night is 5:30. So we'll be back ourselves next Sunday to look back on the Merseyside derby. And also look back on Brentford as well. So we will catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.